Are you a questioner, a wanderer, or even a bit of a snooper? If so, then you'll feel right at home in Knoxville. We've got miles of trails to wander in our urban wilderness, award-winning eateries to satisfy your culinary cravings, cultural sites to open your mind, and dog-friendly activities that'll have everyone wagging. Knoxville, calling the curious. Learn more at visitknoxville.com.
Terrorists are demanding large amounts of money. You simply say no, but is it as straightforward as that? We have these sickening images this morning, the usual orange jumpsuits being worn by a couple of people kneeling in front of a coward who's got his face covered, this so-called Jihadi John. And the suggestion from these militants is that they want $200 million ransom in exchange for the life of these two Japanese hostages. One of them's Kenji Goto. He's a well-known freelance journalist. And Haruna Hakawa, he went to Syria to set up a private military contracting company. The Japanese Prime Minister has said that Japan takes this seriously. They've looked into it. And to the point where he's cut short a tour he's on to go back and deal with this personally. But he said they won't negotiate with terrorists or pay any ransom. Last week, the Italian government paid a ransom to ISIS, believed to be around 12 million euros, for the release of two female aid workers. Those women have since been released. So, I mean, are there any circumstances in which governments should pay a ransom? Do you talk about it? Do you go through situations where you might consider paying it because it might give you a money trail that will allow you to get to the people you are trying to apprehend? Bob Carr is Australia's foreign minister. He's now director of the Australia-China Relations Institute at the UTS. He's dealt with situations like this. He's on the line with us now. Mr. Carr, good morning.
Good morning, John. Good morning, Gary.
Bob, thanks for joining us. Are there any circumstances in which a government should pay ransoms?
No, we don't believe there are. And I think the case against it is all the stronger when you're looking at ISIS.
Do you think this move by the Italian government last week to pay the ransom to ISIS of these two female aid workers, should they have not done that? Has that set a precedent now?
That would be the Australian view. And again, all the more relevant when you're dealing with ISIS, which is a body that's not amenable to any sort of negotiations, and one that has got one of its greatest successes is a fundraising structure, a business plan, that means they've got a flow of money that can see it armed to the extent that it's ahead of many nation states in the world when it comes to the people it can marshal under military command and with a level of equipment that makes them very serious, as they're proving in Iraq and even more in Syria.
Now, during your time as Foreign Minister, there was an Australian man, Warren Rodwell, who was taken hostage by Islamic terrorists in the Philippines. Was the government asked to pay a ransom in that case?
There was reference to ransoms. It went back some time. It went back before my period as Foreign Minister, but during the 18 months I was on the job when the Rodwell case came up, there was never a question of us paying money across. I maintained contact with his sister during this time. He, of course, had taken a huge risk in opting to live in part of the Philippines against all the advice. The advice was emphatic that it was dangerous for someone to live there, someone with a Western background to live there, and as a result, he was taken hostage. But our policy of not paying ransom was maintained throughout that sad period.
He was later released, though. Did the family end up paying some sort of demand?
Oh, I haven't got access to the files, so I forget the details, but it's one thing for a family to do it. We would not have advised anyone to have done it.
It's pretty hard, though, isn't it, if you've got someone's family and they've got kids and they've got extended family and they're pleading with the government to do something because they want that person freed and they know they're going to be killed if they don't pay the money.
Extremely hard, John, and we've got the Western world's got experiences going back to the 1980s and on some occasions governments have broken ranks. The French in the 1980s dealing with hostages in Lebanon, for example. Even the Americans may have done it or come close to doing it. But the view has firmed that you only encourage the taking of your nationals as hostages if at any time you break ranks. And dealing with ISIS, which has already got a formidable fundraising, revenue-producing apparatus, the case against doing it would be overwhelming.
It seems that portfolio, Foreign Affairs, comes up with just about most of the ticklish ethical and moral issues of our time, doesn't it? Now, when it comes to, say, the issue of the execution and the coming looming execution of Mayuran Sukumaran and Andrew Chan, the two members of the Bali 9 team over there in Bali, they may well be executed in the next 2 weeks. Do you think the Australian government has been doing enough to urge the Indonesians not to go ahead with those executions?
Yes, they have been, but it would trouble the families of those two men on death row in Indonesia that the Australian government, Labor in government, the coalition in government, is not trashing the Australian-Indonesian relationship over the issue. The fact is that is not going to be done, because if you go into another jurisdiction and defy the laws of that jurisdiction, you will be judged according to the laws of that nation, not according to Australian law. I think that's something that is probably clouded in many Australian minds. We all have an expectation that Australian values will apply in these cases, and we abolished capital punishment in the States and nationally decades ago, but not in Indonesia. And the Indonesians feel very, very strongly that their country is going to be victimized by drug dealers unless they take a consistently hard line. And I believe this government has done everything it could have done. It would have been raised at meetings between our foreign minister and the Indonesian foreign minister, and even between Tony Abbott and whichever Indonesian president he was meeting, which of the two he has met. It's always on the agenda. It's on the talking points. It's always there to be raised.
Can you see any circumstances, though, under which the Indonesians might spare these two?
The Indonesian president, if he did spare them, knows he would be attacked in the Indonesian legislature, where there's a very strong view that Indonesia is the victim of drug dealers and has got to exterminate this.
Is it as simple as him being able to provide something, to say, well, this is what I got in return? Does horse trading come into it?
No, that would not work. That would not work. And I don't think there's a way out here. And I don't think the Indonesian president can avoid being responsible if there's a pardon issued. He's going to cop the blame. He's a new president. He hasn't got a strong position in the legislature, and there is a strong anti-narcotics trend or current in Indonesian politics reflected in their legislature.
So, I mean, the cold, brutal reality is that we're not going to let the lives of these two men interfere with a long-term relationship, both at a trade level and at a political level, with Indonesia.
There's too much running with that relationship. If Indonesia goes bad, if it congeals in an anti-Australian posture, then we would suffer in a lot of ways. There's not only trade, but there's the cooperation on counter-terrorism. The Indonesians are vital on that front. If they were to shrug off sharing intelligence with Australians, working to track down terrorists within Indonesia because they threaten Australians, then there would be Australian lives at risk. This is a big relationship, and no Australian government is going to say we're trashing it, we're incinerating it, because we want to register the strongest possible protest over the treatment of Australians who've broken Indonesian law against all the warnings, knowing, as they must have, that Indonesia has capital punishment.
7:19, just a final one. I know you miss deeply your time there at Macquarie Street and the cut and thrust of state politics, but let me just take you back there for a moment. You strongly advocated in the late 90s the sale of the poles and wires so that infrastructure could be built across New South Wales. Mike Baird now wants to do it. Is it a good idea?
John, I'm not going to walk into state politics. It'll surprise you, I know. You would have been expecting to get a big, juicy comment from me on that front. But I'm going to...
Just saying that you... I still believe it should be sold.
I'm going to decline to comment, John. Bitterly disappointing you, I know.
Do you oppose the sale of the poles and wires?
And you, John, and you, Gary, will have very good days. You've got a lot of subjects to explore.
Good on you, Bob. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Bob Carr, the former Premier of New South Wales.
That's a rarity, isn't it? You didn't want to wade into that one.
Well, he's the one thing he has got is a political antenna, and the truth is, in the late 90s, he wanted to sell off the poles and wires and use the money to build a whole lot of infrastructure, and he was opposed by the unions at the time. And I'm sure his attitude hasn't changed, but he doesn't want to produce a headline. Former Premier Bob Carr has endorsed Mike Baird's plan.
Certainly not. Or embarrass Luke Foley.
What defines Ohio? A place that dares to go first and never looks back. There's no slowing us down. In Ohio, we're powering America, discovering breakthroughs, driving the future, propelling tomorrow. At Jobs Ohio, our mission is clear. Strengthen job opportunities and empower Ohio's workforce. Ohio, our time is now. See Ohio's momentum at jobsohio.com/Ohio's time.
Are you a questioner, a wanderer, or even a bit of a snooper? If so, then you'll feel right at home in Knoxville. We've got miles of trails to wander in our urban wilderness, award-winning eateries to satisfy your culinary cravings, cultural sites to open your mind, and dog-friendly activities that'll have everyone wagging. Knoxville, calling the curious. Learn more at visitknoxville.com.